We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI. Stanley Cup Finals Edition.
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show.
A bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
Pete Blackburn from CBS Sports.
What are you guys doing?
Putting on the foil.
Yeah, you want some?
No.
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
Hey, none of that stinking root beer.
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Here we go. Game 6, Hour 2, Sunday Skate, June the 9th, 2019. Still talking hockey. That can't be a bad thing, although officiating, dominating the discussion here over the last couple of days, and rightly so. Tripgate, the Bozak non-call, the Achari flop, as Jerry Callahan and a couple of others, Stu Grimson, would like to make it. The only part of it that looked like a flop, and I agree that it was, I don't think it was, as you say, it's pretty tough to flop when you're getting slew-footed from behind. But the right leg does go so wildly out of control. It's just, I don't believe Kelly Sutherland's looking at it and thinking, oh, look at the right leg. I'm not calling this. That's not happening in real time.
Right. And, I mean, it did look like he threw himself back a little bit.
Right.
But I also think that that's partly because he was just surprised to get tripped from behind.
Right. Speaks to the egregious nature of the hit itself. You think it's incompetence. I think there's a little bit of a, it's a fear factor, which has crept in since the Vegas series. It's also just a minute, maybe not so minute. Hey, we're letting them play, and that's going to benefit St. Louis. That's not a bad thing. Gary Bettman would love to see the Blues raise the cup.
You think so?
First time in 52 years would help the franchise out. They've been down for so long. I don't know if it's a good story. I don't know if it's a memorable team. You were chatting about this off the air.
Extremely forgettable team.
People would go think back and remember how magical the St. Louis Blues run of 2019 was if they win this
game. In 2 years, you won't remember a single. You might remember two forwards on this team. Tarasenko.
Jordan Binnington's going to be the Conn Smythe
O'Reilly.
Winner. Is he going to win? If they win tonight, Binnington wins Conn Smythe, or would it be Tarasenko?
I have no idea. I have no idea who that Conn Smythe would be.
But should be Parayko. But
if it's Binnington, that's a gift because he hasn't been great either.
I mean, O'Reilly's been good in the series. He's their highest paid player. He's
very bad before this series,
pretty bad. He's been good lately. Yeah, you're right. It's sort of a nondescript team. Craig Berube has been impressive. I give him credit, but he's just a cement head who has no. He's not memorable in what he says, his quotes. He's still an interim coach. It's
Jaden Schwartz has probably been their best forward or most surprising forward. I think maybe their MVP heading into the series,
heading
but he hasn't
playoffs.
Done.
Yeah. No, I haven't heard from him much. He's delivered a couple hits. That's all. All right. Before we get to Maria and some of the other calls and the officiating, now you threw this. Nowhere. Pete Blackburn gives me a. Here's what I've heard.
I heard Marchand has a broken hand. That's what I've heard. Haven't been able to confirm it, but it's what I've heard.
So Pete Blackburn has heard but can't confirm it. So now this gets into the now you haven't tweeted it, you haven't written it at CBS
Sports. I don't want to own it, but that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
See, this is the beauty of talk shows. You can just throw anything out, and if it
exactly.
doesn't if now this is a major can we talk about where you've heard this from? Because if Brad Marchand has a broken hand, it would explain a lot in this series. We would not agree. This would it would right. make a lot of sense.
Make a lot of sense. Yeah. I've heard from Vegas, the odds makers
from
in Vegas.
From odds makers in Vegas.
That's what that seems to be. I received a nice little message saying a couple of guys, injury guys in Vegas,
couple
said that Marchand has a broken hand.
Wow. Now, but you're not going to go with that. This is not a trusted source necessarily.
Yeah, I'm not.
It's hearsay.
I'm not ready to own it.
But
I haven't reported it myself.
You realize, though, by saying this on...
No, I know. But
you might have to own it in some form.
Well, I'm not reporting it. I'm saying that I can't confirm it, but it's what I've heard.
You go back to the Bruins scrimmage before this series began. The Thursday night in front of the sellout crowd at the Garden, which at the time, that was the big concern going in. Hey, even Cassidy said, we don't want to get hurt.
Right.
And Brad Marchand left pretty early. They played two periods. He didn't miss a shift, according to the report, but he left flexing his hand, his left hand, at the end of the first period. Looked like he was in discomfort on the bench. He came back after the practice, after the scrimmage. Cassidy said he's fine. He jammed it. He's fine.
Yeah.
But is it possible he broke his hand, but then came back? It would be odd that he came back.
Right, that he came back in that scrimmage. That would be... I think that if he broke his hand in the scrimmage, he would have left and not returned. Because you don't want to risk it there. But, you know, that is something to keep in mind, that it happened, and now there's rumblings Yikes. That he has a broken hand.
Well, you know, and Bergeron had the maintenance day, so people were rampantly speculating before game three, whatever it was, that, you know, he's hurt in some form or fashion. It could right. be. I mean, after every cup final series, we hear
after every
15 guys.
After every series, you always hear that
surgery,
guys are banged up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think that's a bombshell. I think now, if you're not owning it and you're not, you know, it's whatever. Somebody slid in your DMs and said Vegas is saying this. It's kind of like the Dunsky report from Fourier, but
it's not like a random guy, a random stranger who okay. slid into my DMs. It's a
somebody
guy
you
who
know,
has who has footing there. Yeah,
and you're a big swinger in the hockey world now. At CBS Sports. You're how many followers now on Twitter?
I don't know, like close to 80,000.
So 80K. So you're a major force there. So I would say that's to be taken somewhat seriously. But if you're not going to own it. Not 100%.
I just can't confirm it, so I'm not going to report it.
All right, to the phones we go. Maria in Watertown anyway. Starts us off here in hour two. Good morning, Maria.
Hi. I don't even know what to say after that little nugget there. I'm at a loss for words. If that is in fact accurate, then that does explain a lot. But to my original point, and I want to say this very slowly and very clearly, lest I be accused of being a crybaby by talk show hosts on other stations. The Bruins did not lose that game on Thursday night due to the officiating. They lost the game because they can't score right now. However, the officiating has been nothing short of an utter abomination throughout the course of the Stanley Cup Finals. And Bruce Cassidy was absolutely right. These finals are going to leave a black eye on the league and also on the team that ultimately ends up winning the cup. Because what are people going to remember? Are they going to remember the fabulous run that both of these teams have had? Or are they going to remember one missed call after another? Pete, I went back and read your original article with the laundry list of nonsense that has happened, and you could actually do an amendment to that story right now.
Thought about
given
it.
Some of the, oh my God, I think you should, because it encompasses everything that has gone wrong with these finals. Having said that, our best players are clearly not our best players. And, you know, regardless of who's injured or who's not at 100%, if they don't get this figured out and Cassidy doesn't start pushing the right buttons as he's been able to do all season long, the only thing the Bruins are going to be hoisting after tonight are their golf clubs. I'm just wondering what you guys see as potential in-game adjustments or game start adjustments that will get these guys going, because I'm at a loss as to what is happening with our best players, because they're almost non-existent. And you're not going to win a Stanley Cup with your third and fourth line.
Right. You know, in the Game 7 in 2011, Maria, who scored twice, Bergeron, Marchand, those guys did rise to the occasion by the end of it. Pete, you want to reiterate your drastic changes, line combinations for this game?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see them break up that third line and put Coyle on the first line and Johansson on the second line and really stack the top six and run those guys into the ground.
Johansson has been on fire.
I think he's been their best forward in this series.
I enjoyed watching him play. His effort, his energy has been refreshing to watch, given some of, you know, the other struggles that we've seen from Marchand and Pasta and Bergeron and Krejci. Where is Mr. Playoff Krejci? Where has he been? Because sometimes I don't even hear his name being called during these games.
He's not getting a lot of help on his wings, I'll say that. DeBrusque has looked really, really bad, and obviously Backes hasn't really done much. So tough to pin it on Krejci. But again, that's why I would love to see him get Johansson, because he needs a little help. I think Johansson's been their best forward in this series. I think that if you're going to go down, you should go down swinging. You should run that top six into the ground.
Yeah, you need to just throw everything you have at them today. You have no choice, right?
Yep.
You have no choice but to throw everything you have. And you know what? Whatever the result is, at least you can say, you know, we threw everything we had at them.
Thank you, Maria. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, guys.
The concern there is you're breaking up Johansson and Coyle, which is a proven success for you. That's the line that's working, so you're splitting them apart. That's why I don't like it.
They're not winning your games, though.
True. The adjustment I just would rather see would, Marchand and Bergeron, you're not going to break them up. That's the duo. So I don't mind stripping Pasternak off there. I don't mind giving a couple shifts for Johansson or Coyle, whoever you want there. But can you please just try for once to get him away from Parenko and Bomeister? Bruce, try. It's game six. I know you don't care about line matching that much. And he overreacted, actually, in the first series. We were on him for that a little bit. But this rolling four lines, there's a reason Colton Parenko's a story in this series. He is he's totally owning Marchand. If he's got a broken hand, it explains it a little more. But still, he's out there, and maybe he can score one or two with a broken hand. Let's go to Lou and Lowell here on Sunday Skate. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning. I guess I'd take it off speaker, I guess. Well, you guys are certainly, this is the first time I've called a radio show, and actually my life probably. I'm 67. I live in Lowell, and I've been a Bruins fan. Well, once the arrival of Bobby Orr, I was a bigger fan like everybody was. But I started with the bowling line when I was a kid. Was it Busick, Oliver, and Williams? Was that how it went?
I'll buy that.
Hello?
I'll buy that, Lou. That sounds good to me.
All right. Good. Well, the real reason I called is, and I was talking to you, the person that answered the phone, is that I was referring them as our referees or their referees. Is there like two sets, one that referees in St. Louis and stays there?
They've been rotating two sets. Yeah, there's four refs that
have
been rotating.
Oh, they rotate between
games. Every other game, yep.
All right, so I said to your host that earlier this week I heard on the news that ironically there was one set of referees that every time that set worked, we would win the game, and that the other set, St. Louis, would win the game.
Well, they have traded wins.
Correct?
Yeah, I guess that's accurate.
That's well, I heard that on your channel earlier this week.
Well, no, well the Bruins, the game,
and I sleep with it too. So
the 7-2 win, Kazari and Sutherland reffed that game. That was game three. So I guess they were 2-0 with Sutherland and Kazari, who missed the call until they lost the other night. So it was actually reverse. Chris Rooney and Gord Dwyer are the other two, and they were 0-2 with those guys who were going to be the guys tonight.
Now, did we inherit any of these guys from that San Jose series where they missed the call and the hand pass?
Those guys
haven't worked.
Those guys were benched.
Yep.
Thank you, God.
Yeah.
Lord knows what they'd miss with us.
And you might get two more going that way.
Who's refereeing tonight? You guys know whether we have a chance tonight because of this or no?
Well, you're going to get the other pair. Thanks for the call, Lou. You're going to get Gord Dwyer and Kazari and Sutherland are out. So whether that's not been good for you in the series to this point, but Chris Rooney and Gord Dwyer are two.
They haven't lost because of those guys.
Right. So I don't think.
You feel a little bit better about that.
Although, were they in? They were in for the Grizzlick-Sundquist sequence, and they missed that one. And Sundquist was later suspended for it, so it's not like they've been flawless in this series. But it is interesting. And now, for Game 7, if they force it there, I can't imagine Sutherland would be out there again. That would be unbelievable.
Yeah.
Guy would be murdered in this town before he got to the rink.
I'm surprised that they haven't said or come out and said that those guys aren't going to work again.
I know. Walkum wouldn't even comment. Basically, the director of officiating.
Insane.
What is that about? We don't comment on judgment calls.
It's insane. And they've come out after the previous calls, the previous clear blown calls. They've said, "All right, we'll own it. We'll say, you know, those were clearly missed." I cannot believe that they didn't say that should have been a penalty.
Now, on the Vegas call, it was after the series, so I guess maybe they felt freer to apologize or whatever. But
after the hand pass.
The hand pass was right after the game.
After
they
the
apologized.
Game.
That's amazing. There again, anti-New England bias. creeping into the National Hockey League. Tim and Lowell next here on Sunday Skate. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, boys.
Morning.
Don't take what I am going to say initially. I have a couple points here, but don't take what I'm going to say literally. But Brad Marchand is playing in this series like he's got a bet on St. Louis. That's how bad he's playing, in my opinion. He's passed up so many open shots, it's a waste of time to even have him on the power play. I would just basically use him mostly for penalty killing. I just don't know what's going on with him. But in my opinion, for what you expect from all the players on the team, to me, he's been their worst player based on the expectations. So I don't really know what's going on with him, but he's been a major problem.
Well, what did you think of Pete's loose report that he's got a broken hand? Would it make sense?
I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. I know I heard something about it, that scrimmage that they played, that he may have been injured. I'm not buying that. I think it's from the neck up is what his problem is. But, I mean, who knows, maybe something will come out after the fact. But I'm not buying that he's got a broken hand. But if I can make one other point, I'll let you guys go. To me, the big issue here, and I'm afraid to say it, but I think they are going to lose tonight, but there's too many players on this team that have been physically intimidated. Heinen's been an empty uniform out there, and there's other guys that I think have been intimidated too, and I think that's a major factor in this series. And I know the kid's kind of an unknown player, but I wish they could have kind of kept the kid around for this series, the kid Trent Frederick, to play a little bit at the end of the year. If nothing else, they could have plugged him in to counteract the physicality of this series. He might have had a place in this series to do something like that. If they can't do that, maybe they ought to dress Jake DeBrusk's father, Louie, for a couple of the games here, because he was one of the toughest players ever play in the league. I wouldn't mind seeing him out there for a couple of these games.
Well, back as they benched, who was one of their more physical guys, Tim, we'll see if he gets back in tonight. It's funny. Big Bad Bruins, the cliche, that was kind of mocked over the last few years. Every time they would sign one of these quote-unquote physical players, a lot of the media would just scoff at that. But in this series, you could use a little more thump, I guess, unless you just feel like you're going to beat them with speed.
Well, I mean, they came out in Game 5. That first period, they played really physical. I thought that they answered that physicality really well. Just after St. Louis's goal, it felt like a win for St. Louis, and I tweeted this. It felt like a win that the Blues got out of that first period tied 0-0.
Yep.
And then they scored immediately after the first intermission. And
Marchand hit the post. That was huge. Yeah. You know, 5 minutes ago in the first.
And then the Bruins were chasing the game completely after that opening goal. And
the first minute of the second, St. Louis owned, right before the O'Reilly goal. The whole first 60 seconds, they came out flying and just took control of the game.
So I'm saying, I think they got a boost going into the first intermission tied up. Because they got completely outplayed in the first period, and the Bruins looked good. They were putting everything on net. Binnington was giving up rebounds all over the place. And so, you know, they just abandoned their offensive attack after that first period. Very, very frustrating.
Intimidated. I know some people were pointing at Pastrnak as, shying away from a hit in the corner from Sundqvist, but I don't blame Pastrnak. He's a skill guy. You don't want him thumping in the corners. If he can avoid a separated shoulder, you do that. Heinen's gotten a lot of criticism, but he's playing on the best line they've had, Johansson and Coyle. So he's got to be doing something right. I mean, he's not scoring for you, but he's a defensive-minded wing.
He came into the series, the cup final, I think he had like a 90% goal share. He had the best goal share on the team. He was on the ice for, I think it was 8-4 and 1 against through the first three rounds. So really difficult to say that Heinen's been the issue here.
Yeah, DeBrusk for sure. You want to criticize DeBrusk. I think we've all seen it. He did score, but it was sort of a breakdown play late. Who knows, maybe that gets him going for game 6 tonight. Although you want him scratched, basically, and ripped off the top six.
I think that he's looked really, really bad. He scored last game, but I think that there was a long stretch where Jake DeBrusk looked terrible.
And now he's off the top power play, so Johansson is there based on yesterday's work anyway out in St. Louis. Matt in Wilmington next here on Sunday Skate. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. Listen, guys, I thought Jake DeBrusk died in a car accident 4 weeks ago until he scored last game. He's been so bad. I was one of those people that wanted him to sit last game and let Backes play, but hopefully that goal wakes him up. I will say I give credit to a lot of the other callers. They stole a lot of my thunder here, but end of the day, I don't think we don't win tonight unless you get points and production from those top two lines. If they finish this game and you look at the score sheet and maybe there's a point or there's a plus one between those six guys, the season's over. They need to actually do something. But the big thing here is the Bruins have to initiate contact. I mean, it seems like we're playing that counterpuncher. We're the skilled team. They're the heavy guys. Let them hit us, and we'll skate around them and all that stuff. And it's not working. They're catching up to you. They're hitting you. They're grinding you in the corners. They're wearing us out. They're putting guys on the shelf. You have to initiate and make contact in this game. This is where I don't buy that the NHL is going strictly to speed and skill and that these heavy teams cannot win the Stanley Cup. We're looking at the past years, and it's always a team that has a combination of the two. You need to have that presence. And the Bruins, Pastrnak is the number one guy for me, have been shying away from any physical contact whatsoever and just thinking, well, they're going to get themselves out of position and we'll score. Well, guess what? They're not. They're hitting you, and they're still in position. So you have to initiate if you're going to do anything in this game, and the top six have got to do something or it's over.
And, Matt, if they're putting the whistles away, and we know St. Louis can't score on the power play, why not? Why not take some liberties? Exactly.
They're doing it. I mean, you see, what I don't understand is that if you're seeing that and you go, okay, as Brickley would say, we know where the threshold is, but the Bruins seem to know where the threshold is because St. Louis is showing it. But they don't take advantage of it. They don't even really take any chances. I will say Marchand with a stick in the pads of Binnington, and he gets called. Yeah, you're like, all right, so these guys can run Tuukka 3-4 nights in a row, but we put one stick in the pads of Binnington and we're going into the box. I guess that gets confusing, but you've got to take those chances. You have to.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you know where the threshold is, but it's being called one way.
You don't, because game three, the threshold was someplace, and then after game three.
Right. Well, that's the story of the playoff officiating. It changes game to game. It's stupid. There's no consistency, but there's especially been no consistency in the way that it's been called on both sides.
Here's the credit to the Blues, though. What's not fluky about them, Winnipeg, they shut down the Scheifele line. Dallas series, they shut down Tyler Seguin. San Jose, they shut down Couture. And now Bergeron and Marchand. So if you, yes, physical, but they're obviously doing something right tactically to shut down the top players on all four of these teams that they've faced. And those are all good lines and good players that they've taken out. So if this is the best line of hockey, they got to show it tonight.
Yeah, you also say that top line, even if they're not producing offensively, their job is to play both ways and shut down defensively, and they haven't done that either.
Yeah, they haven't been totally exposed, but I know what you're saying. They've given up, four even-strength goals, right, something like that. They've been outplayed by Shen, Schwartz, and Tarasenko.
Crazy.
I can't imagine. Going into the series, I never thought that would have been the case. And to be honest, in St. Louis, they've been outplayed by the Blues' fourth line, which is missing Barbashev tonight. Maybe that makes a difference. All right, Matt Kalman will check in. We'll get his thoughts on the Marchand broken hand rumor and the Pete Blackburn line combination juggling. What would Kalman do tonight? He's headed to St. Louis. He is at Logan. We'll do that next after a trending on Sports Radio WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Now back to a Stanley Cup Finals edition of Sunday Skate with Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman on Sports Radio WEEI.
Well, Kalman's headed to St. Louis, and I thought a great Game 6 morning column. Everything going to be all right. Again, from Kalman today. He's just recycled the post-game 2 column. It's back up at WEI.com. Great read, I thought, Pete. What did you think?
Yeah, great read.
Also, fantastic. On the text line, a lot of Deadwood Matt Kalman texts. People enjoying the show without Kalman here. You and I
having a great
doing
time.
Just fine. Having a great time. And loose reporting from Pete Blackburn. Matt Kalman joins us from Logan. Matt, did you hear the blockbuster, the bombshell that Pete dropped about a half hour ago?
What, that you guys took me out of the intro?
That was destiny. That was going to happen. No. Pete, do you want to reiterate for Matt and folks just joining us here on Sunday Skate what you're hearing?
Yes, Matt, I heard that Brad Marchand has a broken hand. That's what I've heard.
Oh, all right. That could be.
Have you heard anything like that, Matt, in your wide-ranging reporting? And would it make sense?
Yeah, it would absolutely make sense. He obviously hasn't been right, and it probably goes back to that wonderful scrimmage that everyone celebrated because it was so much fun to cover and so much fun to watch, and they gave back to the fans. Next thing you know, Connor Clifton takes out Brad Marchand's hand. It's wonderful.
Oh, that was Clifton's fault?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Definitely somebody.
Now, but if he broke his hand in the scrimmage, would he have continued to play in that scrimmage?
I guess maybe. Yeah, probably not. Maybe. Who knows? But maybe he would. Maybe he didn't know it was broken. I don't know. It seems kind of weird that he would have. Maybe if you have to test it out, though, I guess test it out. But he hasn't taken any maintenance days right since right after that. So I guess he's been at all the practices, too. So maybe he's finding ways to adjust to it. Maybe they're using some kind of splint or something, and he has to keep getting used to it.
Keep in mind, Pete is not tweeted this nor wrote it anywhere on CBS Family of Networks. So this is just it's hearsay at this point, but it's a food for thought. A possibility, I guess, is the best way to put it. But you wrote about Mark. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, again, we don't know what the injuries are. So for now, we just have to just write that he's stinking up the joint. Once we know about the injury, then we can put it in perspective, I guess.
Yeah, which you sort of did write today in your column at EEI.com, and you sort of hint that you're seeing signs of him breaking out of it. Am I capturing the essence of your piece correctly? You think you saw some good trends from Marshawn in the last game?
Yeah, I guess better than obviously the first four games, and maybe not as much as in the Toronto series where he had, I think, 5 shots in game 5, and that was really, you could see him, just on the cusp, and then he had the big game in game 6. 4 shots in game 5 this series is a good sign, and I think the better sign is the low bridge hit on Tarasenko that's getting no publicity. I'd like to have seen him do some of that in maybe games 1 or 2 and send a message, but maybe he'll get a little feisty here. And actually, if the Bruins do lose, at least they go down, pushing and fighting and scratching and clawing instead of the way they've kind of gone down every game they've lost in this series where they've just kind of let the Blues steamroll them.
It's not gotten no coverage because our good friend Damian Cox from Toronto tweeted,
of course,
thank goodness no Bruin did anything illegal. They are an entire blessed team of Lady Bing finalists. And later, another day ending in Y, another NHL player suspended for hitting a Bruin.
Oh my.
Have we figured out if this guy got food poisoning, illegal seafoods or something? What happened to him? What the hell happened to that guy? That's all he tweets. He never tweets anything else. He doesn't even tweet about the Raptors on the cusp of a championship. All he tweets about is hate tweets against the Bruins. It's the most bizarre thing.
Yeah. Well, that was a cheap shot by Marchand. And you're right. It's sort of overlooked. So if he comes in tonight and plays over the edge, it wouldn't surprise me. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's exactly what they need. Now, Pete has another drastic report today. It's not a report.
It's an idea.
It's a thought. It's an idea. You want to give your line combinations to
that? I think that if you're going to go down, you should go down swinging. I would love to see them break up that third line and put Coyle on the first line and Johansson on the second line and run that top six into the ground and see if they can't get anything going.
Yeah, I hate that because I want to keep Johansson and Coyle together because they've been magic together, and I think that's been your best, most consistent offensive connection the whole playoffs. If you wanted to keep them together, and then maybe put a Marchand on the right side or the left side, or mix guys up, and that maybe even put Pastrnak with them, that worked a little bit about against Columbus. I would do that, but I would not pick up what's been your most best offensive pair this whole series and for most of the playoffs here.
Hasn't been good enough to get them going, though. Hasn't been good enough to win.
Yeah. Well, they've been at least pressuring them. They didn't look too good. They spotted those lines toward the end of game 5 and didn't work either. So, to me, you go down with your best line. You go with what got you here. You play those lines and you just let the chips fall where they may at this point. If you're not good enough with the lines that got you here to get through, then something is drastically wrong. Maybe it's a broken hand or maybe it's just a broken will.
Well, you've covered Cassidy all year. You know his tendencies. What will happen tonight, Matt? Will Moore play, Kampfer, Grizzlick, Backes, Chara? Who's in tonight? Who's out?
I would say at this point you have to go 12-6. I mean, Zdeno just came out and talked yesterday. Clearly he thinks he's okay. You have to put Backes out there tonight. I mean, this is what you got him for, right? This is the type of thing he's done all year. A couple extra days rest, playing on with your backs against the wall. You need to have that guy on the ice for 9 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is. You need to have him on the bench in the roof. You can't have him be watching this game, and you just go with what got you here. Like I said, and more. I guess if Grizzlick's not in, you have to go with one of those guys. I would probably say that they'll probably go with Moore because that's just the way they've done it, and he hasn't actually played particularly poorly, so. But again, you just got to go with the horses that got you here at this point. I mean, there's no room for messing around and screwing around the way he did in Game 5.
So Calvin's at Logan Airport. He's joining us here on Sunday Skate. He's surrounded by Blues fans. Is that
you can see some of these Midwestern people are nice enough to watch my back, but
it's kind of weird to see, right?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot more Blues stuff. I don't see one person wearing any Bruins stuff in this whole terminal.
Well, they're
ashamed at this point.
I think they're disgusted by the league, aren't they? Are they just disgusted by the NHL?
Oh, is that what they should be wearing, like zebra stripes or something? Is that it?
Exactly.
Maybe they're paying tribute to the top six by being invisible.
Well, Matt, you and I did a podcast Friday. If there were hundreds, of course, of people that heard it, but for those who didn't, the one moment of minor drama that we had was debating whether or not St. Louis was a better team. You sort of said yes, they are, but didn't want to give full credit. Have you 2 days to chew on it? Who's the better team now?
No, I mean, the better team doesn't always win. The team, it's a team that plays like it's one that plays better like a team. And they have, not only do they have the chemistry and the synergy for their players playing well together and doing the right things, but they have the right game plans, and the Bruins haven't strategized correctly to get through here. And even, you know, you saw the adjustments that they made on their penalty kill, the way they shut down the Bruins power play, and it just seems to take the Bruins sometimes, we've seen in every series, it takes them a game or two to adjust strategically. They don't seem to do those adjustments in game, and now here you are. You have to hope that if they get any power plays tonight, which I don't expect them to, considering what's gone on the last 2 days, they better come out and have. I mean, they've already made the one adjustment, right, Johansson? Like we said, that they should do on the first pair. You got to give him the puck, get him to break in the zone the way he's capable, and then see if they can go to work. But clearly, the Blues have done a better job in all those areas.
Which sounds like you're saying St. Louis is the better team.
They are a better team.
They're playing like
June
a better team.
9th,
I think St. Louis' strength is being able to grind down better teams.
Which makes them the better team.
Right.
Which Calvin will say, he can talk around it and say the Bruins are the better team, but the Blues have outplayed them, which means by the end of the series, St. Louis is the better team.
Yes, right now in their current conditions on June 9th, 2019, I will declare that is right.
If both teams play at their best, I think the Bruins are the better team. But the Bruins have not played like their best because the Blues have grinded them down.
Yeah, and they might not be capable of playing at their best. They might, like you said, I mean, whether it's Marchand or whoever else is banged up, some guys play through things. We know Tarasenko and a few of the Blues guys are playing through stuff. Some guys handle it better. I think Charlie McAvoy's probably banged up right now. I don't think he handles playing through those things very well, as opposed to, you know, Chara or somebody like that.
Well, let me give you a chance to redeem yourself, you and Pete, for Game 6 pregame in Toronto. You both declared the Bruins dead.
I did not.
They came back and won the series. You did.
You're making this up.
You both predicted Toronto was going to win the series. Calvin, am I wrong?
I don't remember.
We're going to pull that audio.
I did not say that the series was over.
You definitively both said the series was over. I said Boston would. There's no way Toronto is going to win a Game 6. We're going to pull that audio before the end of the show now. But let's focus on the now. What happens tonight?
Yeah. They lose.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm going to stick with what I predicted on the podcast. You know, a 2-1 loss. They get a goal, but just can't push forward. They can't come over the top here. And they haven't given me any indication that they're going to do anything different than they've done the last couple games.
And what comes out, if that's the case, you're covering the post game, the aftermath there at Enterprise Center. Any bombshells to come out? What changes about this team? Is it a major shift in the franchise future?
It's not going to be a major shift. I mean, you know, they're going to just regroup. I mean, we know what the RFAs they have to take care of. We know what their holes were and still are as far as dipping into the trade pool or UFA pool. You know, you still need that second line right wing. You can't have it be a revolving door every 2 weeks the way it's been. And they'll have to rethink this defense core as far as the size and strength that we talked about all along, because clearly, they've been, you know, out-muscled in this series.
Yeah, it's tough because Grizzlick was injured. So is that a factor of, you know, the Blues going over the line, or is he undersized? Do they need somebody, you know, is Kevin Miller the missing piece that they didn't have in this series when we look back on it? Or was it just misfortune?
Yeah, maybe when you have your spare defenseman, you just need to have them. If you're going to have small guys in the lineup regularly, maybe your extra defensemen have to be, you know, more bulkier guys than a John Moore type guy, even though he's supposed to be kind of a mix of a guy who can skate and be strong. But, you know, you got to keep adding to your depth. And they always say you can never have too many defensemen, and that's going to continue to be the case.
Well, there you have it. Everything was going to be all right after game two, but now dead. Dunsky, says Matt Kalman. He is declaring the Blues the winner in game six tonight. I want that to be the headline at WEI.com. If they lose tonight, Dunsky, please. That's
all right.
That's on the tee for you. And we need a picture of you in the St. We need a picture of you in the St. Louis Arch in 2 hours when you touch down. All right.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. See you, buddy. That is Matt Kalman at Logan Airport. Going with the decisive pick, 2-1 St. Louis tonight. What say you, Pete?
I'm going to say 4-3, the Bruins win.
And that's regardless of Grizzlick's status?
Yes.
You don't think he plays, but they're...
John Moore's been fine. He doesn't particularly worry me. They have bigger concerns. I think
if it's a 4-3 game just in general, you would think to Boston's favor. That means Binnington's given up four or, you know... maybe three at an empty netter, and you're back into Binnington questioning himself for game. That would be beautiful. You remember Luongo got pulled in game six of 2011 pretty early in that game, and of course they got shut out 4-0 in game seven as well. So that would be delightful if that happens.
Right. Yeah, I think they get on the board early in this game, which will be huge for them. They're going to need a fast start for sure.
Some final thoughts on this one. We turn it over to Wiggy and Reamer coming up at the top of the hour. Your chance to get in, 617-779-7937. We have yet to hear from Don Cherry, our weekly check-in with Grapes. I believe he was taking Zdeno Chara to task for having his jaw broken. So that is must-listen-to audio. That's coming up. It's the Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEI.
Now back to a Stanley Cup Finals edition of Sunday Skate with Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman on Sports Radio WEI.
What do you expect today? What do you get some predictions here? Sure to go wrong.
I do not have a good feeling about it.
Really?
I do not have a good feeling. I think Toronto is just, they've got some momentum. There hasn't been any momentum in the series. I don't think it necessarily carries over, but it's just the confidence they've built up. I think they're just outplaying, and I think the Bruins have too many guys right now that just don't have enough gas in the tank. You know, going back to Krug and DeBrusk, I think I admire their determination to play through whatever they got, and you know, we saw Rick Nash try to do it last year. It was kind of a similar situation where he just was a shell of himself, and these two guys right now, whether it's a concussion or some other injury that came from those hits, they're not the same. And I think those are two huge driving forces on this team that, you know, the secondary scoring that helps support that Bergeron line. I just don't think they have it in them for today.
Yeah, I'm a mush. I'm a mush, so I think that I'll say that the Leafs win. But I will say that the Bruins have not put it fully together yet. They have not played a complete game. So, you know, if they magically do it today, and, you know, you find it at the right time, good for them. But, you know, I don't have a ton of faith at this point.
There it is. That's 2 months ago. And definitively, Pete Blackburn saying, Leafs in six. That is painful to hear.
I said it to give the Bruins the push that they needed to put them over the top.
That's amazing. The fact that John Anderson, who is such a fanboy of Pete, too, he loves the brunch podcast.
Got the hat on right now.
He's asking, like, autographs.
I have not mentioned brunch to Pete once.
Would have been sweet if you cut that audio, like, 20 seconds earlier.
You wore the brunch t-shirt, like a fanboy.
I don't
first
have a t-shirt,
Pete was in. I thought you did. I thought you had
a hat. But, Pete, if you could hook that up.
I got you. Well, not Stuff's anymore. Expensive. Not anymore after you just pulled that crap.
Well, you weren't as bad. You were hedging your bets, at least. Kalman was just negative Kalman, as he always is.
And which I appreciate, because Kalman has been negative today from the airport. So.
Right. So I think good vibes. Yeah. I would think that's your best sign this morning, that Kalman is against you again, as he was in game six of the Toronto series, and is declaring the Bruins Dunsky.
Never felt more confident after Matt declared him dead.
Now, before we get to the phone lines for some final thoughts, we have to hear from Don Cherry. Now, he only, unfortunately, they only put Cherry on Sportsnet between periods 1 and 2. I would love to hear his take and his reaction to the non-call, the trip, the Bozak play. But this is just after period 1. So Chara had come back and played some of this. So they're showing the Chara play. And here is Grapes, as only Grapes can describe it, what happened on the broken jaw.
Let's not get anybody else suspended.
All right.
Now, kids,
Zdeno Chara, as you said.
We're going to show this. How many times have I said, don't stick it? I watch the TV down here. I watched the papers, the whole deal. Not once did they say a stupid play. Here's a guy, 42 years old, wasn't learned when he was a kid. I played 16 years. I never had that happen to him. I saw bad. I saw Al Arbor. I saw him badly cut. Larry the Rock Seidel. You never put your stick like that. Here's a guy, 42 years old, never learned when he was young. Young coaches at the side, never out in front.
All right, Tarasenko drew the penalty the other night, we feel. It was Connor Clifton got him with kind of a similar hit to the Barbashev, and it obviously ticked off Bruce Cassidy.
That this team is in the hunt at all is because of Billington.
I'm not sure that addressed the Barbashev hit, which later became a suspension. But anyway, your thoughts on Chara having wrong stick position on the play that broke his jaw?
I mean, to blame Zdeno Chara for a puck deflecting off his stick and into his face.
Just... Well, you gave a good rationale. You know, stick should have been out to the side, not in front. You're going to learn that when you're a kid.
Sure.
In midget hockey.
Sure.
So Chara
I think Zdeno Chara is a better defenseman than Don Cherry.
I think that's questionable. We got a Rhode Island Jersey weighing in for some final thoughts here on Game 6 Sunday. Good morning, Jersey.
Good morning. So a couple things. I am not a fan of seven defensemen. I didn't really catch y'all's opinion on that. As a forward, that always kind of screwed with me, not that I'm a pro hockey player or anything. I think that messes up the flow of the team, the flow of the game. Guys can't get going with each other. No one. I know Bruce jumbles the line a lot, lines up a lot, but I just think that's it takes guys out of their game. Number two, with the refereeing, obviously that was the worst call I've seen in a long time. It hurts to see it. We still had to score goals, though. We still had plenty of opportunities, and we didn't. I know these guys are NHL players, and you know they're up on a pedestal, and they feel that they can say things to the refs throughout the game. But I really think the Bruins need to keep their mouths shut because it's in times like these that you just need to play hockey and keep your head down. So I'd like to see a little more of that tonight and a little less barking at the referees and just play a complete game.
There you go. Steely resolve, what Jersey's calling for tonight. As far as 7D screwing them up, I would tend to agree based on what I saw last game.
They had no choice last game.
I would agree, and I was calling for it. But by the end of the game, Pastrnak looked gassed, and they seemed out of sorts. Wouldn't you concur with what he said? Like,
yeah, I mean,
they
again,
seemed screwed up by the end of it.
I think that you go back to 12-6 tonight, but yeah. I do think that they had no choice in Game 5.
And it would have worked if they had jumped on him in the first period. They looked good in the first, and it was working, but they just didn't finish.
I think had they got a goal in the first period, I mean, obviously, you know, whatever, we're looking back in time, and what happened. But I think if you got a goal in the first period there, that's a different game. They wouldn't have abandoned their offensive attack had they actually got some... if it wasn't a fruitless endeavor. I think that they got frustrated in that first period with their opportunities, and then they really overthought things. They were overpassing for that 30-minute stretch where they got nothing going. So I just think that they got frustrated that they weren't able to get anything out of that first period, and had things been different, could be looking at a 3-2 series lead for the Bruins.
Well, it's Billington v. Rask tonight. John Cherry said it. He said it plain and simple. That there's guys obviously could play a factor as well, but... I'm waiting to see on Grizzly before I make my pick. Unfortunately, if Grizzly doesn't play, I disagree with you. I think Moore is trouble tonight. So I like St. Louis if Grizzly is not in the lineup. But Grizzly plays, that's the jump they need. So let's see you on the game day skate today. And you're in general, you like the Bruins, though. And Kalman likes St. Louis, so that bodes well for everybody.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm saying 4-3 Bruins.
And a game 7 would be awesome. Just no matter what happens, you get 4 more days of hockey talk and... second game 7 in Cup Final history for the Bruins franchise.
Bruins win tonight, they win the series.
There it is. Pete, good stuff all season. We may or may not be back next Sunday. Right now we're not scheduled to do so either way, but let's see if we get a bonus episode tacked on.
Parade episode.
If not, though, you've been awesome. A great addition to Sunday Skate.
Thank
we
you
appreciate
very much.
All your contributions. And check out Pete on Twitter. He'll be active, I'm sure, here in the next 24, 48 hours. Pete Blackburn, CBS Sports Finest. Coming up next, Wiggy and Reamer, they're at Fenway Park, and Wiggy is in gloat mode because he is in all week on Mutt and Callahan. It is Wiggy week, which means Reamer will not be heard again on these airways because there's no night show either for like a full 7 days after today. So he's got 3 hours, and Wiggy is going to bludgeon him at Fenway Park, so it's a must listen. Sorry, Reamer, silence for a week, basically banned from WEEI after today. That's on the way next.
You know, Stu should go.
go on construction protocol so they can rebuild his brain. I mean...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.